Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks. Well, good morning, Natalie.
Morning, darling. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm in a what feels like a cupboard, but I'm not in a cupboard.
Oh.
Because we're working remotely again today. But it's okay. I think the acoustics work okay, but, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Half term is what it is. So, I've just recovered from being super ill last week, Darren. But I'm feeling like I'm on the mend now and I'm ready to go and see some more theatre.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot going on at the minute, actually. A lot of new shows just opening this week.
There is. We've got a lot of press nights coming up in about a week's time.
Yes. In between that, I've got the film festival in Berlin. So I'll be flying out of London, flying back in again just to get some more theatre in so we can review it with you guys.
Exciting.
Yes, very much so.
Exciting. And so your film's going to be on show?
My film is going to be screened at Berlin Film Festival next Friday. This Friday. It's coming Friday, yeah. So this is very exciting.
Oh, exciting. And it's all about that DJ in the background.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. See if anything comes from that 3-second shot.
Oh, sure. She's always myself. About you, dear. Speaking of which.
Brilliant. So what have you seen,
well, that's what
my darling?
That's what I wanted to start with. So speaking of, like, it's not always about you. Let's talk about, we've already reviewed this, but I hadn't seen it at the time. And now I have seen it, which is Sam Mendes' direction of The Motive in the Queue, which is the transfer from the National Theatre. I really enjoyed it. I know you enjoyed it too, but I really, really enjoyed it. I got so much out of watching the performance. I mean, it was a masterclass in acting on that stage from Mark Gatiss and Johnny Flynn. And I loved Tuppence Middleton as Elizabeth Taylor. I really felt that Eliz Taylor was on that stage wearing those diamonds, you know, interacting the way she was with the other characters. I love those little moments where the ensemble cast in their roles met Liz Taylor, as in the character, for the very first time, and how they reacted to her, you know, like the Hollywood queen that she was, you know. So that was really, really fun. And Mark Gatiss as John Gielgud, to me, was brilliant. Obviously, I've never met John Gielgud, and the play set in 1964, which is a little bit before my time. but I really did lose myself in his character. I did really lose the fact that I saw a performance by an actor playing a well-known person, and I really felt that it was John Gielgud on that stage. From the things I've seen of his, either it's I've never seen him live, but the from the movies I've seen or any of the documentary stuff footage about him and that as well. And I love Johnny Flynn, such a wonderful portrayal of Richard Burton, and very different to anything I've seen him do before in the past. So great job, really, really great job. And obviously that a lot of that stems from the great direction from Sam Mendes, one of our greatest theatre directors of our time. So, yeah, I'm really pleased I got to see it. Really, really thrilled.
It was a phenomenal production. And, you know, as I've always said, I love sort of a play within a play, or at least, you know, showing the meta theatre of the rehearsal process of a play leading up to the production. Everything that I have to say about it, I've obviously said in a previous podcast. But, yeah, I'm so glad that you got a chance to see it, because it is a wonderful production. And as I said, I think that scene is one of my favourites, where the other cast members sort of slip into their sort of hotel apartment and one by one meet Elizabeth then. and their reactions to her, sort of starstruck, etc. And just, yeah, incredible to see that sort of in the rehearsal room and then outside of the rehearsal room, Richard Burton. And it's like a slice of life, seeing into their lives. I love that.
Yeah, I loved it too. And as you say, yeah, a slice of their life. Like, you know, these well-known, I think more so Elizabeth Taylor, but obviously Richard Burton was an incredibly well-known actor within his own right. But it was this like snippet of their life together and how she gave up, like, as she, I think one of the lines was, you know, she gave up millions of dollars in movies to be in London so he could play Hamlet. And Like, I love all those tabloid moments where the action behind the character who was talking would just freeze, and then they'll blend into the next scene. And the brilliant stage direction, the staging and stuff by Ez Devlin, like how the scenery would collapse down into almost like a square. The character would walk out of that and then link into the next scene. I thought all that was wonderfully done.
Oh yeah, it was quite filmic, wasn't it? The way it just I actually don't know what the term is for that, but yeah, it was incredibly filmic the way in which the scenes transitioned. It's very clever.
Yeah, no, it's all very clever. I mean, it's a clever set all around. It was masterful. I'd like to have seen it at the National, but I don't know how different the staging would have been. But yeah, I mean, Ez Devlin is a genius, Olivier Award winning and Tony Award winning set designer. I've actually met in real life, and she's very lovely. She was doing a talk, and she was launching a book. But this book was really interesting because it was huge. It's like a really big piece of art within itself, and it had all these wonderful things going on inside it. Can't really describe it well, but it's not something you could pick up on the tube. It was quite huge and
coffee table.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a piece of art within itself. It's like a sculpture.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And it came in a box. So yeah, she was promoting that. But wonderful light design again by John Clark. I mean, I loved the costumes. It was by Katrina Lindsay.
Oh, gorgeous.
Oh, gorgeous, especially Liz Taylor's dresses.
The colour palette as well. It all just blended beautifully. It's gorgeous, I remember. Sumptuous.
But the whole thing worked so, so well. I mean, the thing is, though, if you got someone like Sam Mendes, he obviously, with his clout, can control a certain budget, because there's another play, which we'll review later on, which is The Hills of California, which I got to see last week. And again, absolutely brilliant. But the staging was exceptional. Like, there was so much money invested into how it looks. And I think with directors like Sam Mendes, they get that clout. I think producers allow them to have that because it's a Sam Mendes production. And it often transfers, it often extends, you know, it comes back, it tours. So, you know, with someone like him and that clout that he's got, then the producers are more willing to kind of give up some of that budget to make things much more of a spectacle.
Yeah, it's going to make it back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I don't make it back, but it's, you know, I don't know of any Sam Mendes plays that have flopped. I don't know if any of our listeners, you know, want to comment and say, oh, I know this play, but personally, I don't think anything that he's touched has ever gone to ruin, as it were.
No. That is phenomenal.
Enough about The Motive and the Cue. You saw another wonderful piece by the Lyric Theatre, which is on now, which is Metamorphosis. I can't even say it. Metamorphosis.
Yeah. So this is adapted from the novella by Franz Kafka. And this is a new adaptation written by Lem Sissy. So Lem Sissy did Refugee Boy and loads of other things. OBE, poet, playwright, etc. And Refugee Boy was like a stage adaptation of the Benjamin Zephaniah. But yeah, this has been on tour since September 2023. It went Royal Plymouth, Curve, pretty much, you know, the circuit, Mayflower, Southampton, Liverpool, Colchester, Guildford, Bristol, Belgrade, etc. And now it's in its final stage of this tour at the Lyric Hammersmith until the 2nd of March. And this is in conjunction with Frantic Assembly. And as you know, Frantic Assembly are one of my favourite theatre companies. They've been going since 1994. And so the director of Frantic Assembly, Scott Graham, has worked alongside Lem Sissé to produce this. And yeah, it's an interesting one for me. You know, I love Frantic Assembly. I've loved all their productions. I've seen everything that they have done to date live. And I'm a massive champion. Get them in every year to work with all my GCSE and A-level students. Really, really important practitioner. Now, Metamorphosis for me, I'm personally not a huge fan of the story. When I did German A-level, I read the Franz Kafka in German. So maybe that's where, you know, I'm not a huge fan. And obviously people know it as the production where, you know, or the story where a guy turns into a dung beetle. And that's kind of the story. But they've taken this and they've given it a slightly more modern retelling. So they're thinking more about families trapped inside debt, being ground down by the debt, and a crisis when the breadwinner becomes the burden of the family. You know, so previously we've thought of it as the story of a man who turns into a beetle. There's obviously the play adaptation by Stephen Berkoff, which personally I prefer, because it's nearer to the traditional story. And, you know, I just love the way that Stephen Berkoff interpreted it. But yeah, they've created something slightly new from this. They've said, and I quote, a respectful response to Kafka's brilliantly disturbing, heartbreaking novella. And basically they've gone, Gregor Samsa wakes up each morning, quietly leaves the house to take the same train, works to pay off the family debt. But that world explodes one morning when Gregor awakes to find himself changed. To those around him, he is dangerous, untouchable vermin. Worse than that, he is a burden. So they've, you know, obviously Frantic Assembly are all about physical theatre and embodying that and interpretation, and they've done that, and they've made it this kind of visceral, vital depiction of a human struggling with things. Personally, I struggled to get to the theatre on Thursday. I took my A-level and GCSE students, but I was feeling pretty unwell and pulled myself out of my bed. And maybe when I was watching it, I did feel a bit like Gregor Samsa trapped inside this illness. It was, I was quite... When you know, when you go to the theatre and you're really not feeling that well, it's not always the easiest thing to watch something that's quite sort of harrowing and dramatic, as opposed to if I'd gone to see a piece of musical theatre like the thing we're going to be discussing later. But it was a strong production, a really brilliant cast. I love the lyric Hammersmith and the staging. They put on a lot of the Frantic Assembly stuff. And I think this production has adapted, you know, a lot of people I know saw it right back in October. And I think it has evolved over that time a little bit. I did really enjoy it. It's not the normal Frantic Assembly thing that you would see. This is more on a par with Fatherland and the Believers style of Frantic Assembly work. Whereas I prefer more the love song, Things I Know to Be True, I Think We Are Alone kind of style. This is more surrealist, obviously, because of the storyline. So for me, it's the storyline. But the guy who played Gregor, the actor, Philippe Pacheco, he was phenomenal. His physicality was incredible. So yeah, I'd recommend it. But for me, the storyline isn't a storyline that grabs me. So it's hard for me to say. But in terms of everything, a great production, great set, costume, acting, physicality, etc., etc.
Which is basically that, if you think that Frantic Assembly rather kind of encompasses.
Yeah.
You know, from my... Obviously, you're much more included. That's not the right word.
I am so included.
You're much more versed to the workings of Frantic Assembly than I am. I've seen a few of their bits, but not as much as you have. You're very much a big fan of these guys. I know that much because of the way you talk about them in the past. So yeah, okay, should I go and see it or should I leave it?
I don't know. How do you feel about the whole, you know, man being transformed into a dung beetle storyline? I think that's where you have to go with it. I kind of wanted more projection. It looked like they were doing some really great projection with the beetle. I kind of wanted to go further. There was moments where I was like, for me... Moments when he's up on the wall and stuff, I wanted to see more of that, because, and then I'm like, I've seen that in their Stockholm production, I've seen that upside down thing in The Believers, I've seen, I don't know, for me, I don't, when I was on the train on the way home, I was trying to articulate it, and years ago, I went to see Complicité. And they were one of my favourite theatre companies, and, you know, A Disappearing Number still to this day is probably my favourite piece of theatre that I've ever seen. And I remember talking and talking about Complicité, bigging it up, taking someone to the theatre with me. And we went to see, what was it called? The Mask and Margarita at the Barbican. And I walked out at the interval, and you know, I rarely do that, Darren, but I did, because I just couldn't, I just wasn't, I just didn't. And I had that moment where I was like, now Complicité are no longer my favourite theatre company. And I don't know, I just, there was something that just didn't, I just didn't really, I didn't really connect with the characters enough. Therefore, I didn't really care enough. And for me, when I go to the theatre, I like to get engrossed in the storyline, be involved, care about the story that's going on in front of me. And I just didn't connect enough, because the opening was so incredibly stylized, which is fine. But for me, with Frantic Assembly, I normally connect on an emotive level to the characters, and I really care and want to know what's going to happen to them. And there was just a disconnect for me. And I don't know whether that was because I was ill, but I think if I had been well, I'd have felt the same. I think there is so much going on at the moment, Darren, that if you were to try and squeeze this in, I'm not sure. You would feel like a man trapped in a room turning into a dung beetle.
And there's probably worse things I could change into, but I don't think that's one of them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before I go all upbeat and stuff, while we're talking about this kind of thing, can we just talk about A Mirror for a second? Because I finally got to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I saw this and loved it.
Yeah. I wasn't so keen. So I know it's interesting because we like very different things, which is why our podcast works, in the sense that we're not always talking jolly about the same stuff or negative about the same stuff, but hey, jolly, you like your stuff, I like my stuff, and sometimes it
yeah,
you know, it merges and we like the same things. But you did go on about this play. Now, I thought it was okay. I can't pinpoint really what I didn't like about it, but I just... like the whole twist near the end and stuff. And I was like, oh, really? That's it? I don't want to go into too much detail because obviously I ruin it for the people that have yet to see the play. It was wonderful to see Johnny Lee Miller and Tanya Reynolds on stage. That was really cool. I mean, what I love as well, we were sitting near the front on the aisle in the wedding part, that makes any sense. And so Johnny was walking around us and, you know, got up to really close to him and stuff. But it's interesting where you've seen these, like, movie stars like Johnny in so many films, and then you see him in real life, you think, oh, he's quite short, isn't he? That's the first thing you ever say. You think, oh, he's quite small. But yeah, you know, I thought it's the performance wise they all did a great job. I really do think that. I just didn't really like the play, to be fair, and I just didn't care enough, I think, about what was going on. I am a bit surprised why it's 2 hours straight through, though, why they couldn't have fit in an interval. But I don't know, maybe they just didn't want people to leave. Ha.
Yeah. They knew what you were planning.
No, I don't think it's that bad that you'd want to leave, but it was not quite what I thought it would be.
Did I big it up too much?
No, but you like what you like, yeah. And it's okay.
I think so, for me, it was that whole question of what makes good theatre verbatim. It was the... I thought Tanya Reynolds was... It's interesting, you were sat down in the stalls because I was up at the front of the dress circle. And for me to... You know what I'm like? I love stuff in the stalls. I feel engrossed. I feel involved. What I just said, you know, about Metamorphosis. When I was watching Metamorphosis, I was up in the circle. So, you know, that might have had some bearing on it. But having said that, when I saw Motive and the Cue and when I saw A Mirror, I've been in the Royal Circle. And so that's interesting. The fact that I still really loved something, even though I was there, it travelled that far to me. But I think, yeah, I think, Darren, for me, it's that whole, I love a play within a play, or the, you know, the metaphysics of showing the rehearsal of a play, or the script reading within it. I don't know, something about it I loved, but I can't quite put my finger on it. But it's interesting. And, you know, we do like very different things. And some things we have absolutely screamed about that we both have loved, and there have been some things that we've both walked out of that we really didn't like, and we won't dwell on that one. But
no, the play about the bird, yeah. No, for me, I know you said about the play about the play. It actually, there were moments that reminded me of Noises Off, and that's interesting because Noises Off is a fast comedy, and A Mirror is supposed to be a serious take on things that are perceived as real but really aren't. because of censorship. And I didn't like the whole thing of the fake wedding. Again, it's not a spoiler alert because you'll get that quite, and actually it's in the blurb anyway.
Yeah.
But this whole thing about, and also it was really funny because when Tanya's character first came on stage, I thought, oh, well, that wedding dress is a bit cheap.
You were close up, I suppose. It looked nice from the circle.
Well, no, it's a simple. I mean, anyone could have bought it from, like, I don't know. I mean, we'll say Topshop, but it doesn't exist anymore. But
that was the point, though. It wasn't a real wedding. It was just
I know it was just a costume, and I get it, but it's just thing. Ah, come on, you know, it would have been nice if a better dress. Maybe not. I don't know. Again, I don't know. No, these are like you're kind of picnicking now, but I don't know. I mean, again, like I said, performances were great. It wasn't the kind of play that I was that excited by the end of it. I was excited to see it, and I'm really glad I did get to see it. I think it could have been a bit better, personally. Not the play, well, the play itself, actually, the writing. I think it could have been a little bit more clever, because once the twist comes out, it's like, oh, really? For me, I was quite underwhelmed.
But then you knew there was a twist coming, maybe, because I said that there was a twist. It was really difficult. It's a very difficult one.
Well, no, it's in the blurb.
Oh, is it in the blurb? It's a very difficult one to talk about without giving too much.
It is. I mean, it says, you know,
too much away, which then spoils it. It is tricky.
Well, yeah.
It's a tricky one.
It's on about, you know, how they're in for the search of for love and truth in a society that values neither. And, I mean, yeah, I do like the whole motherland stuff. It felt very Russian, and that's quite on point now with what's happening, obviously, in the world with Russia. But yeah, it felt a bit Hunger Games to me as well, this whole thing of suppressing a society that they can no longer actually enjoy theatre. They have to stage a fake wedding. But yeah, I don't know.
Underground theatre.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. But moving on from that dreary scene to something really wild and glittery and fantastic. I'm talking about The Wedding's Off, But the Honeymoon is On. It can only be I Should Be So Lucky, the musical. I should be so lucky, 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 lucky. I should be so lucky in love.
They sing like that?
Hopefully they don't sing anything like that. Could you imagine? Hence why I don't do musical theatre. But this musical is doing a tour. It's doing a UK tour, maybe a world tour coming up. You never know. Right now it's in Oxford, but it's moving through for the next 4 months. Well, 3 months, sorry. Finishes in April. It comes to Bromley. It comes to near us at Churchill Theatre in late March.
Oh, nice. Churchill.
Yeah, so I may go and see it again, because I saw it in the Wimbledon Theatre when it was the nearest place to London.
Because I was due to come to this one, didn't get to go. So I'm quite keen to see this. If it's good, tell me more.
Well, this was our clash, wasn't it? This came up the same night as A Mirror. So you did A Mirror. I did I Should Be So Lucky, knowing I'd see A Mirror later on. So. And obviously, I Should Be So Lucky, can't even say it properly, I Should Be So Lucky was only Wimbledon for a week. So it was a very limited window for us to see it before it went off elsewhere in the UK. Now, it's for me, it was a better version of Mamma Mia. The storyline, kind of similar with the wedding aspect to it, and it's called off, and then all these things happen. So basically, the wedding doesn't happen. They go on this honeymoon, the bride... bride-to-be, rather, and her party, as in her bridesmaids and best friend, gay best friend, of course, go off on the honeymoon, and they take mum and gran with them. And gran is played by the wonderful Gemma Churchill, who's a lovely friend of mine and also was in my play Diary of Somebody. Now, I love Gemma. She's just one of those wonderful, generous actresses that is just gorgeous to be around in real life, very generous. I loved her as part of my company in the play I did. And she was great fun in this. And another good friend of mine, Ralph Bogard, and Dominic Anderson are in the cast as well. And again, their characters were amazing. So much fun. Ralph has been popping along in the theatre scene and that for a long, long time now. And his character as Hassan is like a kind of masseur. Well, he is the masseur in the piece. Very funny. Great comedy from him. And above all, like throughout the whole kind of ensemble cast, it's quite a large cast, to be fair. It's like 25, I think, cast. And this is a tour. So that's quite a large cast for a tour. So you can imagine it'd be probably quite expensive on their old wages bill. But it kind of needs it. I mean, maybe they could have lost a few of the characters. of the ensemble people, really. But I mean, it works really well as it does. And it is very funny. All the greatest hits are there. And of course, the Queen herself, the Queen of Pop, Kylie Minogue, was in it quite a lot, actually, via hologram. Because obviously, if she was live on stage, it would be quite a costly production. And obviously, her schedules wouldn't allow it to be that way anyway. But she comes in it quite a lot. So the leading lady, whenever she has these internal thoughts and she wants to talk to someone, Kylie appears. And she's that kind of like this mentor that's guiding her on her way of and helping her make her the life choices that she goes through. She doesn't sing anything, which is okay because majority of the songs that the performers sing throughout musical are Kylie hits. And they're Kylie hits from her first five albums. I do believe she was the only artist signed by Stock Aitken Waterman to actually complete more than two or three albums. So I think she was their biggest star. And of course, she's still a big star today. So yeah, it's very good. But I really did enjoy it. Like, it was one of those feel-good shows. The music was great because I know all the hits. Like, lots of songs from, see, Jason Donovan, Bananarama. Even Hazel Dean, if I don't know if you know, remember who she is. And yeah, and some other, like,
name.
Obviously Donna Summer and the like. But again, it wasn't so much that you could bop along and sing along. I mean, obviously you can mouth along a bit, but the way they orchestrated the songs was very to do with the piece as opposed to being a traditional jukebox musical where they would just burst the song. It was a little bit like Mamma Mia where the song would help the narrative and you would obviously... But the things like Better the Devil You Know was done in a really cool way. I Should Be So Lucky itself was done in a really fun way that I hadn't heard before. It's funny, I was at a friend's wedding about, oh God, 10 years ago, and the song where he came down the aisle, it was a gay wedding, was I Should Be So Lucky, and it was done by a friend of theirs, and he sung it a cappella, and it was done almost like a poem. It was really beautiful, actually, and it was the first time I'd ever really focused on the words, and it's very... like perfect for the grooms, what I remember of them anyway. I think they're divorced now, so yeah, obviously wasn't so lucky. But there you go. Yeah, so you definitely should see it when it gets to Bromley. I think it is definitely one of those feel good musicals. It's perfect for the touring kind of like the provinces, for sure. It was sold out, I think, at Wimbledon. I mean, the house was packed when I was there. Whether or not it'll come into the West End, I don't know. I think it could work. I think casting may need to change a little bit to encourage people to come in and pay West End prices for a show like this, because obviously when it's touring, the ticket prices are lower. Also, obviously, you've got the tourists and stuff. You know, do they know enough of the hits from back then to warrant them coming in and buying a ticket? I don't know. I'd like to see it come into the town. I don't know where it would go as such. Kind of a mid-scale theatre. Maybe somewhere like the Noel Coward, perhaps, would be perfect venue for them. Even if it's just a limited run, just bid it as a limited season and then send it back on the road again. I don't know. But I think it would do well in Asia. I think it would do well in Australia. I think it would do well maybe in Canada. I'm not sure about the USA, but certain places where Germany and places like that would love all this, you know, all this kind of camp, late 80s, early 90s music. But it was great fun.
How did the hologram work then? Because obviously up until now, you know, we've got ABBA Voyage, and we were talking about this, about a year ago on the podcast of, you know, the future of actors, musicians, holograms, etc. So how did that work alongside the other actors within the cast? Because you said she wasn't singing within her hologram.
No, she was just talking. So and looking fabulous. I mean, she looked great. But there was like a mirror. So when our leading lady would need to, you know, talk about what's going on in her head, there would be this mirror and she would be the reflection in the mirror as if she's talking to herself. So Kylie was her, like, in a kind of fairy godmother type character, I guess, and help her make the decisions that she's making, or at least steer in the right direction. But like I said, she was in it quite a lot, actually, and she did look fabulous, and she did such a great job. I know, like, you don't really see her act anymore, but of course she was a former actress. But she played the role of Kylie as Kylie very, very well. So yes,
good casting.
Can you imagine? It'd be very odd if they actually played, I don't know, got an actress to play Kylie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure how that would work. It might look a bit silly. I don't know. Or it may work really, really well. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. You've got MJ, the musical. You've got an actor playing Michael Jackson. You've got Tina, the musical actor play. You know, I don't know. I guess it would work. People would still pay money and go and see it, wouldn't they? But I like the idea of the hologram.
Now, I think with those shows, though, they are those performers playing those people specifically for those roles. I think adding Kylie into a wedding that didn't happen, honeymoon somewhere, would be, who would she be? The tour guide? I mean, like, you know, mother of the bride? I mean, I'm not sure that would work. But, you know, maybe that's another show for another time. I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether she'd ever actually perform even in a film, to be fair. It's been a long time since she's done a film. I think Moulin Rouge was the last film she did where she played, was it the Blue Fairy in the film?
Yeah, the little absinthe fairy, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's what it was. Let alone on stage. Yeah. I mean, you know, whether she'd come in and do a West End debut or not, I don't know. Who knows? But the choreography was not fun. You would like the choreography. So Jason Gilkison, was the choreographer. Obviously, it's written and directed by Debbie Isitt. And obviously, the music we know is all by Stokhaven Waterman. But it was great fun. I mean, really, really fun. So much fun, I'm going to go and see it again. In fact, my parents have already booked. They've already booked for Churchill. Aww. So I may join them at that one.
Nice. Yeah, we might go. Lovely. Oh, fantastic.
And yeah, so that rounds up our week. So what have you got coming up? I know we've got a couple of shows that are crossing over again. I've obviously seen Just for One Day. You're about to see that, so we can talk about that on the next podcast.
I'm about to see that, yeah. And then we've got some fantastic press nights coming up. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Standing at the Sky's Edge as that transfers to West End. I'm really looking forward to seeing... It's quite a long title. Four black boys who thought about committing suicide when the hue got too heavy. I think I've got the words around the wrong way a little bit, but it's a long title and I've been looking forward to seeing that one for a long time. So quite a few things coming up.
Yeah, no, it's good. Well, until next time, Natalie.
All right then, darling. Take care and have an amazing time in Berlin. Good luck with it all.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.